The Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf with Dr. Robert Winters.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast. I want to thank you for all your supportive emails about having Edwin Watts Golf join the team. Have I sold out? Hell yeah. Will it affect the content? I hope not. Now, even though my goal has always been to cover the mental and strategic parts of the game on Golf Smarter, I've never wanted to spend much time on PGA news or equipment reviews. But this week, I'm going to Las Vegas to the PGA New Product Expo and will be bringing my tape recorder. So hopefully, on next week's show, we'll have some information on new and interesting golf products. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Winters, the author of The Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf, and he's resident psychologist for the David Ledbetter Golf Academy at Champions Gate Golf Club in Orlando, Florida, which we covered about 8 episodes ago. Of course, the thing that intrigued me about this book was the subtitle, No Nonsense Strategies for Mastering Your Mental Game, just the type of topic that you keep writing me about. Welcome, Dr. Bob.
Fred, it's great to be on your program. You know, thanks for having me.
Well, it's actually, I've been hoping to get you on for quite a while because I've seen your book and I completely agree with it. I mean, the book being The Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf, this is the kind of thing that we've been talking about on the Golf Smarter podcast for a long time.
Well, I'm glad, you know, to talk a little bit about it and talk about, you know, some great mind stuff. And that's really what I've been doing, you know, for many, many years. And helping literally now thousands of golfers along the way at all different levels. And I think that's really what the Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf is really all about. I mean, it's the first book, I think, that explains in detail to all levels of golfers how to think and be successful on the golf course. And I'm very, very proud of it.
Give us a sense of some of the people that you've helped that we may have heard their name before.
I think, you know, we can take, you know, start with people like Bill Glasson, Brian Gay, Lee Westwood, Justin Rose, Charles Howell III, you know, Rachel Hetherington, Nancy Scranton, Julieta Granada, Jonathan Moore, Division I champion from Oklahoma State University, and a couple of his teammates, Tyler and Trent Leon. The list is, it's a pretty distinguished list, and it goes on and on. And but what I'm really most appreciative and thankful, you know, are the literally hundreds and hundreds of golfers that, you know, aren't on any of the professional tours, but, you know, are trying, you know, to do their very best in junior golf, trying, you know, to get into college, and then going on and being on what we call the mini or the developing tours, and then just going after their dream. And just some, you know, people just like you and I, you know, we're just trying to get better each and every day and, you know, play at our club and hopefully win the club championship.
My club is a 9-hole course down the street, so I don't know if I fall into the club category. But I'm really curious to know, because there's the hackers like myself that are out there, but then you're talking about some names that I definitely recognize, some of those names. Their skills are quite developed, and their technique and their methods. But how come they need help from a sports psychologist?
Well, I mean, if you think, you know, the game is a very physical and yet very mental game. It's also a very emotional game. You know, whatever level, whether you're a scratch player or you're a 25 handicapper, the game is very mental and it's extremely emotional. Even though we try to keep our emotions as well balanced as we possibly can, but the reason, you know, these people seek someone like myself is that they need someone to talk some things out with. They have anxieties just like everyone else. They have insecurities. They have self-doubt. They also have performance issues. Sometimes they don't really just have the fear of failure. They have the fear of success. So that's really where a person, you know, with my expertise, my background, comes into play. And, you know, and it's not just, I'm just a sports psychologist. I mean, I've played at almost every competitive level. I've been to PGA Tour school, senior PGA Tour school. I've been a college golf coach. at the University of Virginia, and I run, you know, Nike golf schools around the country, and I have about 40 years of golfing experience, you know, behind, you know, my name and my background. So I think when someone comes to me, Dr. Robert Winters, they're just not getting themselves a head guy. They're getting themselves, I mean, a total package. We're talking about the physical, the mental, the emotional, and somebody who's actually been there to help, you know, to help them understand what they may be going through, what they might be going through, and how to adjust and be flexible with that. So that's why, you know, some people come to me and talk with me.
Can you clarify for me the difference between the mental and emotional sides of golf?
Well, I think, you know, it's one thing to think good thoughts and to have a great mindset. But I think it's easier to change your mind than it is to change your emotional mood, or what we call the mood set. You know, when you become a little bit frustrated, you know, intellectually, logically, objectively, that it's not good to get upset. But you can sort of rationalize it away. But if you can't rationalize it away, you start to do what we call an emotional hijacking, and that becomes very emotional, becomes very heated, and then you start having this negative anxiety spiral. So it's one thing to have a mindset, which is cognition and thoughts. It's another thing to have sort of this emotional aspect, which is, you know, your feelings and your perceptions and sort of a more of an inner spirit or a gut check, you know, going on during your round. So that's sort of how I differentiate the two.
Okay. I got an email this morning from one of our listeners who said, you know, I'd love to hear a sports psychologist talk. Little did he know that you were going to be interviewed today. And he says, I want to know about the impact of positive and negative thinking and even worse, verbalization. He says, like when somebody putts and says, I suck at putting, to the group on the green. Cognitive dissonance should play a role in that, because you can't believe that you're a good putter and also say things like, I suck at putting, without cognitive dissonance kicking in. And eventually you start to believe one more than the other, and play would start to reflect that.
Now, you know, Fred, I want to ask, is Fred Green saying that, or is the person, you know, writing the email saying that?
That's what the person in the email said.
Okay, well, they've thought about this quite a bit.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He says, I avoid as much as possible saying anything negative about my game.
Well, I think, you know, he's really on the first step to playing, you know, better performance golf. And let's talk about this whole notion about positive thinking and negative thinking.
Great.
Very rarely do I ever say, you know, be positive. Because what happens is, if you tell people, come on now, you got to stay positive, you've got to stay positive, we always look at the obverse or the opposite, and we say, well, what does that mean? Don't be negative? But, you know, in our society, what we really have come to realize is that negativity is pervasive in our society. All you have to do is just pull out a newspaper and take a look at the headlines, and it's all about murder, war, death, pillage. I mean, it's pervasive, and that's really what sells newspapers, and those are sort of the bloody headlines, and people love dirty laundry, and it's very, very negative. Very rarely do you open up a newspaper on the front page, it talks about a beautiful rainbow being spotted in Big Sur, California. You don't really hear that. So what we have to understand is that a lot of people really buy into negative thinking as if it is the norm, as if it's more realistic to be negative than it is, you know, to be positive. But I usually don't use the words positive and negative so much in my work. I talk about purposeful thinking. I talk about having action plans. But I do talk about the power of negative thinking and negative doing, because when we start talking about willpower, you know, I'm always amazed at people's volition, their willpower. But I'm even more amazed at people's won't power, or their negative energy, that they tell themselves they can't do something, they won't allow themselves to do something, and they really totally get in their own way, and they sabotage their own great performance. But here's something, Fred, maybe you don't know, and maybe the listeners would like to know, is that, you know, neuropsychologists, and I work with a lot of neurosurgeons with the Mayo Clinic, in Scottsdale, Arizona, and in Jacksonville, and we've done some real world-class scientific research looking at EEGs, MRIs on the brains and looking at what we call lateral hemispheric functioning between the left and the right hemispheres of the brain. And not to get too scientific here, but you know, what we're finding is that a normal functioning human being has about 66,000 thoughts in a day. Now, that's in a total 24-hour period, everything from thought ideation to color sensations to recognizing people's faces. That's 66,000 thoughts in a day. But here's the kicker. About two-thirds of those thoughts are careful, limiting, worry thoughts that can even be labeled as negative thoughts. So you've got a two-to-one bias there of negative thoughts versus positive thoughts. So if you totally eliminated as many negative thoughts as you possibly could and just focus on the positive, you would probably be going in the right direction, especially with your golf.
That's fascinating. I want to step back when you talked about you provide some action plans. Can you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to get that.
Well, I mean, the first action plan, I mean, you've got to, you know, tell yourself. It's sort of like, you know, this reader is, you know, talking about the email. He said, you know, he's trying to eliminate as many negative phrases and all this negative self-talk, because we know through our self-talk is we become what we think about and say about ourselves most of the time. And if you're talking to yourself and you're talking in a negative, derogatory fashion, you're probably really going to be hurting your self-image, your self-concept, and you're really doing a destructive force to your self-confidence. So whenever you can just eliminate those words and say, you know what, it's just a miss, you know, it's a mistake. Take it for a miss, move on, and if you can't find something good to say about it, you know, just let it pass, release it, and move on. That is one very, very purposeful action plan that you can do. And anytime you find yourself getting yourself a little bit negative or you're getting a little bit frustrated, I always tell people you need to take sort of a mental time out. Just sort of take your hat off or take your glove off and then take a deep breath and then just let those bad thoughts go away and replace them with something, you know, that's positive or more supportive and say, okay, here's, you know, I've missed a few putts, but I tell you what, the next one's going to get me going. And then when you put the hat back on or you put the glove back on, that's sort of, you know, you said time out, now it's time in, and now, you know, my focus is in the next shot. And that's a very simple action plan that a 25 handicapper, a 15 handicapper, and even a tour player on the PGA and LPGA tour, anyone can do that. But the real key to all this stuff, Fred, is just doing it. It's one thing to know intellectually how to do something, but it's another thing to be compliant and do it over and over and over. And I think that's really what, you know, the mass of golfers, they know that it's destructive to talk bad about, you know, themselves. They know it's not good for their golf game, but they just can't help themselves. And that's really where, you know, my work as an applied sports psychologist comes in. You know, I really try to help people understand, here's what you're doing, and here's what you need to do differently.
But anybody who's played golf for any amount of time, and even if you've only been playing for a year or two, but you go to your local favorite course, you've got history against you. Because you're going to come out and go, you know, I just always mess up on this hole. How do you combat that?
Well, I mean, I think you have to, you know, understand one thing. And you have to do this logically and intellectually. And you have to say, that's history. You know, that's the past. It's non-changing. Okay? So if you have a hole, say to yourself, okay, I have a nemesis hole. This hole's giving me trouble. But that's been the past. But today, maybe today will be the day that I finally get through it. And how you get through that is you have yourself a very specific plan. Here's what I want to do versus, oh, no, here's what I think is going to happen again and again. You've got to get yourself to this point of saying, yes, this is a new day. This is a new shot. My past performance does not dictate who I am right now. This is the present moment, and the only time we can do anything about anything in our world is right now with the present moment and the present shot. And that's why you always hear these tournament winners, and I don't care if it's at your club, whether it's a nine-hole club, or it's even at a putt-putt course, you'll always hear the winners say, I stayed in my own little world I played my own game, and I did what I knew I had to do, and I didn't worry about anybody else. And that is really a real key thought, I think, for everybody to focus on, Fred.
Again, you said have a specific plan. And when you step up to the first tee or when you step onto the next tee, having a specific plan means what exactly?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, having a plan, well, let's just talk about having a plan. You know, most people just step up on the first tee, put a ball down the ground, and look out at something, I guess, out in the fairway. I guess they're focused on something in the fairway. They're looking out. They're just not looking down at the ball. In fact, some players don't even really look out in the fairway. You know, you should be having some type of idea about what you want to do with this shot, okay? So I guess the action, you know, plan starts with assessing the situation, you know, creating a good plan in your mind, or at least having a good decision about what type of shot you want to hit and how you want to hit it. That is the very first thing when we start talking about having this action plan. What is it that this hole demands? What is it that the architect is giving me here? And how do I actually, you know, carry this plan out? Because really, if you take a look at golf, golf is really an unbelievable problem-solving activity. You have 18 different puzzles, if you will, you know, on a thing that we call a golf course, and it's your task as the golfer to be able to come up with some answers for each and every problem that comes along. So the first thing you have to do is sort of create this decision in your mind. What is it that I need to do with this shot, and then how am I going to actually carry it out? So to me, making a very clear and committed decision is the first part of your action plan.
There always seems to be so many things you're competing against on any given shot, whether it be the weather, the terrain, the club, par, how high you put up the tee. There's so many thoughts going in your head at any given time. Is it necessary or is it important to combine those thoughts into one thing, or do you have to focus on individual things at a time? How is the best way to approach that?
Well, I think, you know, it's, you know, we always talk about having a great routine, and that's really part of really what having a great action plan is all about. Mm. It's having a routine that allows your mind to really understand and integrate all these different situational variables and to make some sense out of it and say, okay, what do I need to do, you know, right now with this shot? And, you know, most people, if they just say, well, how far am I away? And they'll say, you're 150 yards. And I would say most players will say, oh, that's my 7-iron. And they haven't even taken the time, Fred, to, you know, decide what type of lie, you know, that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because as a golfer, I mean, the first thing we have to look at, if our ball's, is it in the fairway or is it in the rough? Is it sitting up or is it sitting down? The lie, you know, will only let you do, you know, so much. If the ball's sitting up there like a pineapple, well, you've got a lot of different options. But if the ball's sitting down in a sand divot, you know, like Jeff Ogilvie had, you know, at Wingfoot this year in the U.S. Open Championship, you can only do so many different things. You aren't given as many options. But, I mean, that's the first thing we do as far as having a routine. It helps you get your physical and your mental actions together that run parallel so you can step into the ball and hit a very nicely struck shot. But I think that's really why we play golf, is because every day, almost every second, every minute, the golf course, the situation itself is changing. And that's why we have to have this mind, this great mind that's flexible, that's adaptable, so that when we step on the golf course, you know, we're ready for anything, and we know we can handle anything.
Let's go ahead and get to the book and go over some of the commandments and the Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf, which is not a difficult read, and it's highly recommended, especially if you want to improve your game on the mental and emotional side. You have the Ten Commandments here. Let's go through a couple, please,
okay. And help
us out.
Okay, you know, you pick out the ones that you like.
I was going to ask you to do the same thing. You pick your five favorites.
Well, I mean, I have 10 favorites, and the reason why.
And how many did you? You didn't start with 10, though, right? You had to narrow that down. I have to believe.
Well, I mean, it just the Ten Commandments, I mean, if we go down, I'll just kind of go down, you know, the list here.
Great.
That the first one is, you know, you should always have a great attitude. I always say here on the book, you know, on the back of the book, it says, thou shalt always have a great attitude. Thou shalt always believe in thyself. You know, thou shalt play thine own game. You know, you play one shot at a time. You play with patience. You commit to every shot. You keep your game simple. You play with no expectations. You play with trust, and you never, ever give up. I mean, and I've had people who've read my book and said, this just isn't a book about golf. It's a book about life skills. And, you know, they've read the book, and they said, you know, there isn't a part of any of this book where I cannot use in my everyday life, whether it's business, social, personal, or whatever. And they've loved the book. And I said, I know. I said, these are the principles that if you really committed to them every day, I tell you what, your golf game. And we always talk about the mental game being something different, you know, than the physical game, Fred. But I'll tell you what, golf is a physical and a mental game. And I have people say, oh, you're just one of those positive thinking guys. Now, it's not so much positive thinking. It's more about positive doing and getting your mind working in the right direction. And that's why I think the very first commandment is that thou shalt have a great attitude. I think that's probably, you know, the number one, you know, requirement for playing, you know, great golf or just being a great business person or being a great parent. I mean, you just got to have a great attitude and just knowing that some days you're going to be on and some days you're going to be off. But what we know from the really successful people is that, you know, they walk, they talk, they act like a champion, you know, and it's easy to do that when you're playing well, but they still walk, they still talk, they still act like a champion when they're playing like a chump. And that's what having a great attitude is all about. It's just giving yourself the very best chance or the very, very best philosophy to say, you know what? Hey, you know, I'm just going to just do as well as I can, and I'll live with it, and let's keep it going, versus beating up on themselves, having that bad attitude. And we've all played, you know, with partners, we're playing competitors who, you know, they miss the first putt and they start talking about, oh, it's going to be a terrible day. You know, these grips are worn. This course stinks. The green's terrible. And they find a million different reasons, their excuses. And the psychological term is excusitis. And they suffer from this disease called excusitis. They're always making excuses for their inability to just, you know, suck it up and play, you know, great golf and have a great attitude, because it's not their golf talent, their physical talent. It's their mental and emotional attitude that holds them back. So that's really why I put it right here at the very start. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book. And I say, either you really buy into it, you know, hook, line, and sinker, that it all starts with an attitude, or you don't even get off the first tee.
Is there another sport that translates to life as well as golf? I can't imagine anything else.
I can't imagine either, Fred. I golf is about, you know, heartache, and you know, in the book by F. Scott Peck, you know, The Road Less Traveled. I mean, his first sentence is three words: life is difficult. I think we could say the same thing about golf. Golf is difficult. It doesn't have to be as difficult as we make it. In fact, many times it's very, very simple. And if we can keep it simple and keep, you know, the whole aspect of playing golf simple, I think we'd be a lot better off. And that's another one, you know, of my of my commandments, is that you try to keep the game as simple as you possibly can. Because if you're over the ball and you're thinking about 20 different things, how to hit it, you're just, you know, you're just really nothing more than a motivated pretzel, and you're going to tie yourself up in knots.
Well, you moved up to commandment number 7. I was going to go back to number 2 because it kind of relates to the email that Jim had sent us that we read a little bit earlier, and that is, okay, always believe in yourself or thyself.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, that's a pretty good thing, you know, for Jim to understand, because when I tell players, when you step up on the first tee, what is it that you really have? I mean, you have your talent that you've actually groomed through your practice and through your determined efforts, and you are the sum total of all your golfing and athletic experiences. But if you really don't believe in your ability, and if you really don't believe that you're going to play well, it's probably going to be a negative self-fulfilling prophecy. If you get up there and think, you know what, I'm really going to go out and have a great day today, or have the very best day I can possibly have, and I'm going to really stay focused, and I'm going to give my best effort into each and every shot, and I'm going to believe in myself all day, it is amazing, you know, the level of people's games, the level that they aspire to, and the level of achievement that they attained after a round of golf. I mean, it is a very much easier thing to talk about and very tough to do, and that's really why, I mean, I'm working with all these different professionals and developing junior players, college players, is that, you know, they read this stuff and they go, well, I hear what you're saying, I just don't know how to do it. And that's why I talk about real specific exercises in the book, key point summaries, anecdotal stories, things, you know, that I've developed through, you know, theory work and through my applied work, you know, with thousands of golfers. And these things really work, and people go, I didn't realize it was that simple. I mean, they're very specific drills that you have to do, but until you really understand them, you can talk about trust and confidence till the cows come home, and you can understand it logically and empirically, but unless you do it, unless you actually go out and apply these principles, you'll never really understand it.
You said those magic buzzwords for me again. You said exercises and drills.
Right.
All right, step up. What do you got?
Let's just talk about, you know, one drill. Let's talk about, you know, and it goes right back to the whole notion about, you know, thou shalt commit to every shot. And that's number six, you know, of my commandments. You know, that whole notion, people go, what does that word even mean, to commit? And really, if we take a look at commitment, you know, in life, when you commit yourself totally to something, I mean, it's not, you know, 70%, 80%. When you commit, it's 100%. When you take your marriage vows, I mean, you take, you know, your spouse for better or for worse. I haven't really been to a marriage wedding ceremony yet that says I take my spouse for better or even better. You know, maybe they should have that in there. Maybe they should have that in there, but it's for better or for worse. You're in for a penny, in for a pound. So when you're behind the ball and you're really looking at your target, what is it that you are committing? You're pledging your faith. You're pledging sort of even your allegiance to saying, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to make sure that I commit to that target that I'm looking to, that very specific target, you know, in the foreground there. I'm going to commit this 7-iron, and I'm going to swing it this way, and as I step into the ball, I'm 100% focused that this ball is going to go to that target right there, right now. That right there is a very specific exercise, and it's an exercise based on 100% intention and purposefulness. So that's an exercise you give yourself right there, and that most people don't commit. They just get up there and they say, well, let's just see what happens here. I'll slobber it out there a little bit. And that's exactly what happens. And, you know, they hit a sputtering shot, they hit a, you know, a fungo, they hit a sky ball, a shank or whatever, and they really haven't committed, and they don't understand what it means to really commit to say, this is what I want to achieve now. So whenever I'm working with a player, that's really what we go over.
Fabulous. On commandment number 4,
okay,
you talk about taking one shot at a time, and it's interesting, and we talk about how it relates to life and golf and life. I recently lost a family member to a battle with cancer, and people on almost a daily, how you doing? How you doing? And it's like such a difficult question to answer, and you just... you know, my answer was always, we just take it one day at a time. You know, we just get up in the morning and make sure that we get up in the morning and keep moving. But now I seem to have started saying, we take it one shot at a time. Talk to us about taking it one shot at a time and how it relates to golf.
Well, I'm sorry that you lost a family member. I did the same. I lost my mother to cancer, and she had a bout with cancer that went on for about 15, almost 20 years.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And you know, she was a real tough trooper. So I guess when people talk to me about, you know, mental and emotional toughness, I only have to look, you know, at my mother, who was a very courageous cancer survivor. I mean, she lived with it for many, many years. It ultimately took her down, and this was many, many years ago. She died about 25 years ago, before we really even had some of the modern medical inventions and technology that we do now. But when you talk about taking one day at a time, one step at a time, playing one shot at a time, if you look at every sport, I mean, even if we're talking about baseball, we're talking about we're going to play this game one pitch at a time. If you're a batter, I'm going to actually, you know, step up to the batter's box, and I'm going to, you know, hit this ball, but I'm only going to hit it one pitch at a time. In football, we talk about one snap at a time, one possession at a time. Same thing in basketball. So that whole notion of one is this whole notion of taking baby steps, incremental steps, knowing that you can actually fill a jar of water and you can do it one drop after another. It's one after one after one until the job is done. But what happens is that so many of us have been sort of educated into thinking that score, the running score, how you doing, you know, how am I doing? And we keep sort of this mental scorecard in our head. And the whole notion about playing one shot at a time is talking about, hey, you need to get rid of the running score. You need to get rid of that question mark in your mind. How am I doing? Am I winning? What am I shooting? And Fred, that's the first thing that most people ask after a round of golf. They don't ask you the question, hey, did you give a great effort out there today? Or are you happy with your golf game? Did you enjoy your time on the golf course today? That's not the first thing people ask you.
Absolutely not.
What's the first thing they ask you?
What'd you shoot?
What'd you shoot? You know, what's your score?
Yep.
So it's not really true when we tell people it's not how, but how many. You know, we always tell people that. It's not how many. It is important how we think, how, you know, our mental and emotional procedure is on the golf course, because now we're starting to talk about the process of just playing golf, okay, and staying in each moment with each shot and giving a great effort and committing to that effort one shot at a time. It reminds me years ago of a great story. I was watching, you know, these young children play, like, in an open field, and I was asking them, I stopped them, I said, hey, are you guys having fun? And they all, you know, stopped and they looked at me and they go, what? I said, are you having fun right now? And they go, yeah. You know, what kind of a question is that? And the reason why I was asking them the question is that when you are totally in the moment, when you are just totally into a shot, you're not thinking, wow, I'm totally into this moment. I'm totally into this shot. I'm playing, you know, 1 minute, 1 second at a time. Now, when you are really into the moment, you are totally interested, you're totally engaged with your target, and you have this total absorption with what you're doing. So playing one shot at a time means whatever shot I'm in, I'm not thinking about my past, I'm not thinking about my future. I'm thinking about, you know, the present moment. And there's a great saying that we have in sports psychology, and it goes something like this, and if you'll indulge me here for a minute, it says, I have no future, I have no past. My task here in the golf course is to make this present moment last. And what that really means is that we're here in this present moment, and this is all we ever can do anything in our lives with at this moment. If we're thinking about what we did, you know, the last hole, we three-putted to the last green, or we're jumping into the future thinking about what we're going to do here in a couple more holes, we aren't focused totally into the shot we're facing at hand right now. So, I mean, I think that's really what, you know, playing one shot, you know, at a time is all about. It's playing the shot that's looking you in the face right now, and what are you going to do with this shot? Because it's the only shot you can do anything with. That's why it's so important to get players playing in the present moment.
And that leads us to commandment number 8, which I was so happy to see, because for years I've always had this thought in my head that if you have no expectations, you'll never be disappointed.
Well, I think that was like on Mad TV. I think they had something called Lowered Expectations, and you had sort of this dating service where you had all these people that, you know, were just incredible, what we call, you know, losers. And they say, oh, geez, you know, so I'm not elevating my expectations. I'm lowering them so I won't be so disappointed. But it's true, in our lives, we set expectancies for almost everything. You know, what we're going to get for Christmas, what we're going to receive on our birthday, how, you know, we're going to be greeted, you know, when we get home after a long day. You know, is everybody going to be happy to see us? Are they throwing a surprise party for me this weekend? And who's all going to be there? And it's the same thing with golf, is that we have all these expectations about driving to the golf course. And we ask ourselves these questions of expectancy. What should I expect? How will I play today? Will I play well today? Will I win today? Will my swing, you know, still, you know, hold up? And I expect to shoot under 90 today, or I expect to par at least 7 or 8 holes today, or I expect to make a birdie on that easy par 5, the fifth hole.
So that's a kiss of death, though, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because you're setting a preset standard of performance, and you're saying this is the way it has to be and it must be, and if your results don't match or equal your expectations, what happens? You become frustrated, you become angry, you become discouraged. So what I try to help people understand is you need to let the expectations of hitting the ball perfectly or hitting it a certain way, let the expectations of score, you got to let all that stuff go. You got to let go of them. And the only performance expectation that works is that you expect that for each and every shot, you're going to give that shot its worth. You're going to give it its due, which means you're going to commit, you're going to have a plan for this shot, you're going to think it through thoroughly, you're going to rehearse it, you're going to commit to it, and then you're going to trust everything's going to work out okay. Then you step into your shot, you hit the shot, and then you expect that you're going to accept it, and you'll release it, and you'll move on to the next shot doing the same thing. And to me, that's the only performance expectation, you know, that works to shoot low scores and to be consistent day after day after day.
You have number 7, which for me, I would think that this would be commandment number 10, but keep the game simple.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it should be, you know, kept simple. The reason why I put it there at number 7 is that I think it's at a very good place. So many times we start talking about how difficult this game is.
And, oh, yeah.
And what I love in Arnold Palmer, one of his very best books, he talked about it in My Game and Yours. He also talked about it in Situational Golf. And he said that we sometimes forget that the game of golf was created by ancient folklore by Scottish shepherds taking a stick and hitting a ball prodigious lengths across a sheep field and then chasing it and seeing if they could whack it again. I mean, that's really where the origins of the game, you know, first started. And if we can just remember, hey, that's really the joy of hitting a shot. In fact, most of us get joy and what we call partial reinforcement in the psychological world, we get joy after we hit a shot for unexplained reason. We hit it sweet. We call it the sweet spot theory, is that when we hit a shot, you know, solid, it's like, wow, that's what I play the game for.
Absolutely.
And that's what keeps us coming back. And it's that internal joy that and that feeling, that kinesthetic feeling that we have a shot that came off just like we thought it would. It felt even better than we even imagined it would. And it's going, heaven forbid, right towards my intended target. and then we turn around and look at all our playing partners and go, hey, did you guys see that? Tell me exactly what I did with that shot, because I really don't know. Because right now I'm just playing hit or miss. And that's another reason why I talk about having this action plan, this routine that you go through so you really don't just get feedback, but you create what I call a feed-forward mechanism. You're really planting the seed of, this is what I'm going to do once I step up to the ball. And that's why you take sort of these rehearsal or these practice swings from behind the ball even before you step in and commit to the shot.
Fabulous.
You know, but simplicity is just such a huge part of the game, Fred. I mean, and it seems to me that when you talk to any player at any level, any handicap, and they had a great day, and I'll say, what'd you do? And they go, well, I don't know. I just looking at my target and stepped up there and gave it a whack, and it was simple. It was easy. It was the easiest thing I've ever done. And then you talk to somebody else who's just, you know, belaboring, you know, all of these swing thoughts, and he's been reading all these books all week. He goes out on Saturday, he goes, this game is so complex, so complicated. I'm sitting here going, you know what you need to do? You need to let go of all those books. You just need to put them, you know, away in the corner, and you need to start relying more on your own natural athletic genius and just start looking more at your target and just knowing, just take a good last look at the target, come back to the ball, and swing to your target. To me, that is probably one of the biggest findings in all of my research that I've done in the last 25, 30 years. It's amazing how the visual system drives the motor system directly. I mean, if you could just look at your target, see it, have a specific target, and then come back to the ball and swing to that target, it's amazing how that little white puppy usually finds its way home. it's just an amazing thing, and it shows up on our brain scans. It shows up, you know, on our EEGs. That when people, you know, really get into the target visually, the visual cortex is highlighted, and the left and the right hemisphere of the brains, they're very balanced. There's not an imbalance between the two hemispheres, and there's really what we call brain synchrony or brain resonance. So, I mean, we know that now scientifically, but to say it simplistically, people go, oh, that's too simple. No, it's not. In fact, what I'm trying to help people understand, Fred, is that if it sounds really high-tech, if it sounds really complex, that's not what I'm trying to do with, you know, the best athletes in the world. In fact, the best athletes like Tiger Woods and Ernie Els and Annika Sorenstam, they're leaving all that complex stuff behind. They keep it as simple for them as they possibly can because the game's tough enough, and they don't need, you know, to complicate it any more than what it already is. So when you talk with them, they're trying to keep it very, very simple. But then, you know, that comes back sort of this word called KISS, the KISS formula, the K-I-S-S.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple, stupid. But I don't work with stupid athletes because I think athletes are geniuses. So I always talk about keeping it simple and specific.
Ooh.
Simple thought and a very specific target. And you're swinging to that specific target with a very simple swing key. And if you can do that, I mean, I think you're golden.
That's a great variation on it. Oh, I like the specific part a lot.
Yeah, keep it simple and specific. And that's what most people don't do. I ask them, I say, you know, where's your target? And they go, oh, it's just out there a little bit. And I go, no, you show me exactly where it's at.
Right.
And I can tell you specifically how this happened. In 1994, when I was doing interviews for, you know, the book I collaborated with my good friend Dr. Patrick Cohn, and that was The Mental Art of Putting, I was asking players on tour what putting confidence meant to them. And there was this great-looking guy who I introduced myself to, and his name was Bill Glasson. I mean, he was a great-looking athlete. He was big. He was strong. I knew he had a lot of medical problems. And he looked at me, and he said, well, Doc, putting confidence, that's a foreign term to me. Those two words don't go together, putting and confidence. He goes, I haven't made anything over an eight-footer in about 2 or 3 weeks. So I asked him, I said, well, show me some putts here. I said, where's the apex? Where's the spot? Where do you want that ball to travel over? Where's your line? And he goes, oh, it's just out there a little bit. And I said, show me specifically. And we're looking at some 30-foot putts here now, Fred. And he said, well, it's out here someplace. I said, no, show me a spot where you want this ball to go over. You know, so it was a curving putt left to right, maybe about, you know, 2 feet of break. He says, I want it to go over right here. I said, that's your intention. He said, yes. He got up there and he knocked it in. I said, let's do that again. We went back to about 25 feet, came in, you know, a few feet. I said, show me again. So he went down the line and showed me again that specific spot. And I said, now, show me specifically where that ball is going to enter the hole into the putting cup. And he showed me. He got back there. He made another one. He looked at me. He goes, are you kidding me? He goes, is this all it is? I go, well, it seems simple enough. I said, but before, you weren't specific enough. And you were putting some good rolls on it, but if you're going to make putts, you know, from any length, you know, the more specific, you know, and the more you can really get into a fine target, I said, you know, the better your chances of, you know, getting that ball going and rolling to where you want it to go. So I said, it's not just one thing to sort of kind of get it out there and maybe this will be good, maybe it'll break in or not. I said, you really want to have a very specific line or a specific role of where you want that ball to go. And I said, and you always want to end it with knowing that the ball is going to go into the hole. And so it was kind of funny because he made, you know, another one from 30 feet. He goes, this is awesome. And he went out that week and he won, you know, the Phoenix Open that week in 1994. So that was a kind of a nice testament, you know, to my work with Bill Glasson.
Great story. Great story.
I've had that happen before, I mean, over and over and over. And it's amazing, you know, what the listeners can get if they just get more specific. And really, and the closer they get to the hole, the more specific you need to become. Because what happens in golf is that the closer we get to the hole, you know, scientifically, the chances, your percentages of holing a putt or holding a chip, they increase. But it's funny, as the closer to the hole we get, our levels of anxiety and frustration get higher and higher because we have this expectancy. It's like, I'm expected to make this, and I'll look like a monkey if I miss this two-footer, or I have to make this for my par. And our mind just starts working against us, you know. And so I'm trying to get players to be very specific and say, what is it that you need to do? And they'll say, I need to do this. And I say, okay, then just do it. Just do it. And Nike really doesn't have so much of a patent on that logo, and we've been saying that for years and years, but it's amazing to me how many people say, well, I'm going to do it, but then they don't do it, if you know what I mean. They think they're doing it, but they really don't. They sort of chicken out, and they sort of sabotage themselves. But if you really got in there and said, this is where I want my shot to go, and this is where I want my putt to travel, and then you did it, I tell you what, you'd start to make a lot more putts.
The book is called The Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf. The website is mindpowersports.com, and the author is Dr. Robert Winters. Dr. Bob, that was awesome. Thanks so much for
sharing it with us. It's been a pleasure, and I'll tell you what, anytime, because I tell you what, you know, I love it, and I love talking about, you know, this stuff, and it is my passion, it's my life, and I hope everybody out there has gotten just a little bit of an insight, and hopefully go out and buy the book and visit my website and give me a call. I mean, I'm waiting to help them and waiting to hear from them.
We may take you up on that one.
All right. Thanks so much, Fred.
Thanks so much, Dr. Bob.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hey, Kenny, what do you got for us this week?
Hey, Fred, this week I'm going to do the new Cobra S9 iron. S9 stands for sweet spot. Sweet spot because there are 9 accurate points on the club face. Accurate points refer to the points at which the ball makes contact with the club face. By this, I mean how much offline each shot's going to be if you hit it off center, whether you're going to lose yardage or be offline left or right. The club also features a wide sole with a deep undercut cavity. This is going to offer you more forgiveness and a lower center of gravity as well. Cobra was able to move the weight way back and very low in the club head to create a low center of gravity, which helps the ball get airborne. That is where the forgiveness comes in. Anytime you can get the ball up, you obviously get a little bit more forgiving shot. The club also features a high moment of inertia or moment of impact, sometimes referred to as MOI. That's how much the club twists when you make contact with the ball, which is a good thing. The club offers the highest MOI of all the clubs on the market right now. With less twisting, you're going to have obviously less hooking and slicing of the golf ball. And that's going to be good for everybody. It also features a multi-material club head, which is made up of 3 materials, one using polymer top line and a urethane insert. The polymer top line is a lot lighter than a regular steel that they use, which is a 631. By eliminating that weight at the top, they were able to move that weight way down and back, which gives you that low center of gravity. And also with the urethane insert, this material is going to help dampen vibration. It's also enabled them to make the club face a little bit thinner to give you a little more help with distance there. For a person looking for a forgiving iron and extreme performance, this could very well be the one for you. The brand new Cobra S9 iron is going to be available this week at edwinwattsgolf.com/golfsmarter or at 1-800-874-0146.
That's great. Thanks.
Good deal. Now, Fred, I'd like to talk to you about the set of Yonex CyberStar C280 irons that we're giving away on our next show to one lucky Golf Smarter listener.
Oh, we've been getting good response to this one.
Well, good deal.
Tell me about these clubs.
New for 2006 for Yonex, it's called the CyberStar C280. It features an oversized CUS 630 stainless steel club head. It's a type of steel that they use that's a little bit softer than a regular 731 steel. So it has a softer feel at impact. And they also use a carbon graphite molding in the back for extra feel and increased repulsion, which is going to be distance as well. By utilizing these weights, they're able to benefit from a carbon graphite Yonex engineered shaft. The face of the golf club is only 3 millimeters thick, so the reduction in face thickness allows the weight to be distributed at the perimeter of the club head, resulting in ultimate distance and forgiveness.
As a matter of fact, I was flipping through a golf magazine just past week, and I saw a review. They loved them.
Yeah, the people that I've actually had receive these irons, they've called back. They absolutely are a terrific golf club. Besides a very high-end golf club, very easy to play, very user-friendly.
That's great. And, you know, I even have seen, I think in three magazines now, the Ping Rapture driver that you reviewed last week is just getting total raves everywhere.
I promise if the listeners go out and try this driver, they are going to be satisfied. It is well worth your trip to try this driver out.
Now, it's interesting. What I've been recommending to people for years is for good shopping online, what you need to do is go out, do your research, find the item that you're looking for, and then when you know what you want, and if you want the Ping Rapture driver, then go online and start looking for price. So go check out these irons, go check out these woods, but then when it comes to shopping for it, then you want to go back to edwinwattsgolf.com.
Correct, absolutely.
So, and if you go through edwinwattsgolf.com/golfsmarter, you're going to get your free shipping, too. So you'll get the best price and the free shipping. But we're giving this set of irons away, right?
That is, in fact, 100% free. Nothing the listeners need to do except send an email to golfsmarter@ttour.com with the subject Yonex Irons. Please make sure that you provide us with your name and mailing address because the winner will be shipped a complete set of 3-through pitching wedge Yonex CyberStar C280 graphite shaft irons. But hey, if you don't win, you can always get the best price and free shipping at edwinwattsgolf.com/golfsmarter.
Thanks, Kenny. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, Fred.
Hey, and don't forget that you also get 10% off of any apparel purchase before September 30th when you go through edwinwattsgolf.com/golfsmarter. Don't forget to check out Bunkershot.com, the online golf magazine, for news, articles, and more. And pick up your Golf Smarter postage stamps. They come in sheets of 20 and can be picked up at Zazzle.com/Fred Green. And that's Fred with an F and Green with an E. Figure that one out. I want to thank Juan Gutierrez, who wrote me an email saying that when he listens to the Golf Smarter podcast, he doesn't go through iTunes or a subscription. He listens to it right there at ttour.com and wants to know if we can create a button that you can pause the show while you're listening. Well, we've done it. So if you are listening at ttour.com, there is a pause button there so you can pause and come back. We end with our quote of the day, which was submitted by you. If you have a favorite golf quote, and I'm loving getting these in, and we're going to put a book together, it's something that keeps your head in the game. Send an email with the subject golf quote to golfsmarter@ttour.com. Now, this week's quote comes from Chuck Bull of Garden Grove, California. Now, Chuck sent about 50 of these things, and they were just great. The first one just seems so appropriate after our interview with Dr. Bob, and it is, never try to keep more than 300 separate thoughts in your mind during your swing. The other one I just loved, so I'm going to use it too. Remember, the harder you try to hit it, the shorter your walk will be to hit it again. Thanks for listening to Golf Smarter. I'm Fred Green.